Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Under the Hoodies. This is Bill Kegel. I'm joined by no one again. Dan will most likely be calling 5 minutes into the show like he does every week. Maybe just start telling him to start at 8:55 or 7:55, depending on when we start the show. I think that's probably going to be our best course of action. But we have another caller calling in for our Cowboys update, I guess. We need to know about the happenings for Dallas Cowboys because ESPN hasn't covered it more than enough. So I brought in one of my buddies that is a huge Cowboys fan, which I actually kind of hate him for. But yeah. So Dan's calling in. Oh, he's only like what are we at? Less than a minute into the show, Dan's calling in. This is a record. Dan, what's happening, buddy?
Oh, not much. This is actually the first time that I've called in where I haven't been in the middle of doing something. So
I think the show's off to a huge night. And it was less than a minute into the show, so this is exciting. My back gets a little relief. I'm just messing with you. But anyway, hey, we're going to have Tony call in. My buddy you met when you were here for UFC, I believe, 193.
Yeah.
He's going to call in and talk Cowboys because, like I was joking at the beginning of the show, because because the whole world doesn't do enough Cowboy talk. So, we're going to have him call in and talk Cowboys. He's going to talk UFC. He tries to talk WWE. He's a huge WWE fan.
I
still don't like calling that. I much prefer WWF. Yeah.
Pretty much going to have to carry us on that because it's been a long time since I've watched the WWE.
Oh, we're not going to talk it. That's what I was going to say is we're going to have to keep him off the WWE train. He's probably going to want to talk the Brock Lesnar thing. I'm good to talking to anything WWE.
I feel like we can make one exception. We can make one exception where we could ask him about the Conor McGregor comments about calling everybody in the WWE a bunch of pussies.
I love that he kept using the word dweeb. In his accent, it was actually kind of funny. They're nothing but a
so
bunch
that
of
is the one thing,
there.
And then if he,
yeah,
if he goes any further, it's getting cut off.
Yeah, I got the button right here. I'm ready to X his ass, so we will do that. But anyway, he's going to call in a little bit. He said he's going to let me know before he does, so ideally he'll do that. So anyway, I'll wait for him to actually get here to start talking UFC 202. The reason that is because it was I missed the fight, unfortunately. But by all accounts, it was the greatest fight in UFC history, which I don't know what else that would compare to as a relatively new UFC fan. I guess a lot of the stuff that McGregor was doing at the end of the match, he was sort of running or whatever, which, you know,
right,
he's winning on points, I guess, so it didn't really make that much of a difference. But did you watch it?
Yes, I did. I watched the whole fight. Actually, you know what? It was a pretty decent card. I thought that was a better card than the 200 card.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying
UFC
that, especially
200
the
was kind of a dud. UFC 200 was kind of a dud. But yeah, I did watch the fight. I thought it was a great fight. I thought Conor definitely won the first and second round and third fight and fourth round. And then I thought Nate Diaz took the third and the fifth. I thought it was probably the best game-planned fight I've seen since probably GSP fighting. So the reason is, I mean, you could tell – yeah, you could see, the size difference between the two guys. Nate Diaz is a smaller welterweight. He probably doesn't have to cut much to get to welterweight, and he's a huge 155er. And obviously, Conor is a much smaller guy, and he's a big 145er, where he cuts down get to 145. I thought Conor, when he, the few times, I think he knocked him down three times, if memory serves.
Yep.
And Nate was on the ground, and everyone's like, well, why is he not jumping to finish him? And I think what happened is he knew that if he somehow got caught in Nate's guard, that I think Nate could probably easily tap him. And he didn't want to risk that. So I think he knew he's
right.
Probably Nate throws punches in volumes, but I think he's a more crisp, dynamic striker. And I think,
yep.
Like you said, he knew he was winning on points, so he didn't want to risk jumping in his guard, getting submitted, or doing something stupid. And I think he was running away at the end because there was a point, I believe it was in the third round, where Connor, you could tell, was probably one good punch from getting knocked out or getting TKO'd at least.
Right, because he gassed, right? Yeah, he gassed
pretty
early in, the third round, right? And that's actually kind of amazing. It kind of shows what kind of fighter Nate Diaz is, who got knocked down, three times at that point? And going into the third round, he's knocked down once in the first round, knocked down twice in the second round. And Connor just didn't go in for the attack. Didn't want to go to the ground with Nate. But kind of shows it's kind of freaking
Nate
crazy.
Is a world-class – Nate's a world-class jiu-jitsu
guy. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, let's be honest. If Connor lost this fight, he would have probably – I wouldn't say become irrelevant because he's still the 145 champ, but I think he would have lost his entire mystique. And I think that, it just would have been pretty much catastrophic for his career. So
right.
He was not playing games.
Right. It was a smart game plan by Connor from all accounts. So, okay, now, what do you think Connor's best move is? Next move is, excuse me. I'm hearing he should do the Floyd Mayweather thing, pocket a bunch of money. I'm hearing he should fight Eddie Alvarez for the 55 title. He should defend the 45 title and give Jose Aldo a rematch. Those are some of the options that I've heard. And because Dana's pretty much shot down the idea of a Connor Diaz 3, which I actually don't think they should do right away. I actually agree with that part. But I think shutting it down altogether is absurd. But I think, what the best theory I heard, and I'm drawing a blank on where I heard it, I heard this from Brendan Schaub on The Fighter of the Kid. The best thing that would help the UFC anyway would be if Connor, fought Eddie Alvarez, won the 55 title, and then Diaz fought Alvarez. And if he were to win that fight, obviously win the 55 title, and then make that Connor Diaz 3 a title fight in like a year and a half. That sounds like it'd be the best game plan for the UFC and build up a whole bunch of hype because they split them. So a third would obviously, sort of settle that and put an end to the Diaz-McGregor, whatever you want to call it, I guess. And then from there, I really think that Diaz would be a lot more trouble at 55. I mean, already seeing how his cardio is insane, how that dude never gets tired, I think with 15 less pounds, and being a little quicker, I think he'd be an absolute headache for Connor. But what do you think his next move should be?
Okay, so I'll answer this in three parts. Okay, so one, I actually think Diaz will be easier for him at 155 because I think Connor had a hard time. Obviously, there's a huge reach advantage. I mean, when you're fighting a bigger guy, I mean, that's why there's weight classes because it's hard to fight a guy that's probably is a good 15 pounds heavier than you on fight day because they cut to that weight.
Right.
But I think Diaz was walking around at like 190, 200. I know GSP used to walk into the ring at 195 and he was a welterweight at 170. So I think Diaz at 155 would be easier because that weight cut does take a lot out of you. And I also think Connor may be quicker, too. As to what he should do next, I think this is a two-part answer. I think that what he should do is he should go fight Jose Aldo and then just you know, if he wins, then, you know, he could forget about the 145. And I mean, there's really, I mean, now that Frankie Edgar just lost pretty candidly to Jose Aldo a couple months ago, I think at that point, then he could really say he's cleared out the division. I think what's probably going to happen is Connor doesn't want to go down and fight Jose Aldo and risk losing, because Jose Aldo is really one of the best fighters in the world. He really is a great fighter. I mean, he was undefeated for like 10 years. And I don't think he wants to go down and risk that. I think he's going to try to make that title fight with Eddie Alvarez, because I think he's a natural 155-er, and I think that Eddie Alvarez is an easier fight. I don't think he's quite as dynamic as a motivated Jose Aldo.
Right.
So.
All right, we're going to bring on Tony. So.
Yeah. And I think it's.
All right, hold on. Go ahead. Finish it up.
Just to wrap it up. I think he's going to try to make the 155 title fight, and then he's going to want to say that he's a two division champion, and then after that maybe defend his 145 fight or title.
Gotcha. All right, Tony's called in. Tony, what's up?
What's going on, guys?
Hey, what's up?
Man, not much. Had some technical difficulties over here. I wanted to apologize for fumbling through my thoughts there. My iPad froze up on me, and then I went to try to switch everything over to my phone, and then that was freezing. And it's like, this is the ghost of Steve Jobs haunting me right now, because two Apple products, 0-for-2 on getting them to work for about 10 minutes. So I apologize. I'm glad Dan filibustered there for a little bit. But basically, Tony, what we were talking about is basically McGregor and Diaz's next moves. What do you think they should do?
Well, sounds like the old black cloud is following along Billy Boy again. But honestly, I'd love to see a third match between those two. Yeah, I know it's not what he wants to do, but I think it's the best move. It's the biggest money move, because, I mean, McGregor has made Diaz a bona fide star now. I mean, Diaz always had like a little niche following, and it's interesting as hell. But now, like, I think he's one of UFC's biggest draws along with McGregor. I think you got to do a third match at some point soon.
I do think they're going to build hype by in between now and when that fight actually happens. I know that Nate Diaz wants him, if for nothing else, another big payday. Nate Diaz, I think, had the second or third biggest purse of all time for that fight. He made $2 million for that fight. I don't think he made anywhere near that before. So if for nothing else, he wants the third payday. And then I think the fight makes a lot of sense at 155, and I think that it's going to happen, but I feel like they're going to try to get in a couple other things to just so 145 and 155 aren't at, you know, just a standstill for the next 10 months. So.
Yeah, I agree with that too, because basically McGregor's got to do something with that belt. They either got to get him off it or get it off him, let him go to 155, fight for that belt. You basically can't just have it, you know, in purgatory, just waiting around, no one can challenge for it.
I was just telling Bill. McGregor isn't as interested in that Jose Aldo fight, because there's a real chance he can go down and get his ass kicked. I mean, Jose Aldo is an amazing fighter when he's motivated. I think for a while, I think he was kind of just running on cruise control, like a lot of champions who are so dominant are. And then I think obviously he got surprised by Connor. I think if they fought 10 times, Jose may win 6 times. And I think Connor's afraid to go down and take that risk.
That's an interesting theory.
Yeah,
I do think it's...
I don't blame him. At this point, UFC, they're so just short on stars and draws that they just need to be careful with it right now. Like, and
I totally agree.
As Bill knows, I'm a huge pro wrestling fan, and I know it's two different worlds, but that's the one thing that hurts UFC is that they can't they can't control how things go. Like, they can't market the storylines, and not so much storylines, but they can't make it how they want it. Like, things happen, guys get knocked out, upsets happen. But with the way that they lost Holly Holm and you know, Ronda Rousey lately, they just need to keep building on these stars. They need those big draws, especially with the acquisition they just had. They have to keep their momentum going.
I agree with that 100%. They haven't had a big star since GSP. I mean, they've been looking for a guy until Connor kind of came to I mean, he's been around for a few years now, but until he became, like, the bona fide star that he is, they have not had a draw since GSP retired. And it was, like, 3 years ago. So they really need some stars, and Dana may not admit it, but maybe Dana will make the easier fight for Connor to kind of preserve that star status for him.
Well, that's the thing, and I think that, I think it's the undefeated thing, too. That's like, you know, everybody tuned in when Ronda was fighting because they knew Ronda was going to win. And it's like the point you were making, Tony, which was like they can't really control outcomes. And there's so many different ways to lose and win in the UFC as opposed to, you know, boxing or really any other sport. Like, you know, there's, you know, one way to lose and one way to win. Don't score as many points as the other person. Or, you know, in boxing, you can either get knocked out or you lose by decision. Where in the UFC, you can get knocked down, punches, kicks, and then you can get submitted on the ground countless ways. There's very, very, very little room for error. There's no room for error really in the UFC. I mean, we saw it with Connor in the first fight. Connor was dominating that first fight, and then you know, he makes one mistake, goes to the ground with the, you know, a great jiu-jitsu guy, and gets choked out after, you know, winning the first round pretty handedly. I mean, he cut Nate open pretty good, and Connor got cocky and, you know, went down and tried to fight Nate's game, and I think that's why you didn't see it in the second fight. I think that's why every time Nate went down, Connor stayed right up, trying to avoid that. But I think the Dan's point, I really think it isn't really necessarily – I think Connor is a star almost as big as Rousey, just because – especially after winning this fight and winning, you know, in the way that he did. But if he lost, I mean, the UFC would be lost. I mean, think about it. DC is 18-1. He lost a decision against Jones. 19-1, I believe. He had 19-1 after the Anderson Silva fight. Lost one decision to Jones, and then Jones, you know, he only has one loss, which is a disqualification on illegal elbows,
which he was destroying Hamill in that fight that he lost because of disqualification. I mean, it was embarrassing how bad.
Yeah. Right, exactly, and I think that's more of the point you were making, Dan, which was like it's not necessarily who's a bigger star. Like, I think Connor's a huge star. I mean, the fact that they had, you know, so many A-list celebrities come out to this last fight sort of shows that it went mainstream. It legitimized the UFC quite a bit more than it already was, I think more to the point of, you know, it's Connor can talk a lot of shit, but, you know, if he keeps losing, then, you know, he loses that shit-talking ability. And then, but by winning this fight, I mean, that's back on, and Connor can sort of be the showman that he naturally is. And I think that that's going to be great for the sport. But I think the dominance part, like GSP, like Ronda was, like John Jones is, and, like, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for it, but, like, Cormier is. Like I said, the only loss Cormier has is that decision to Jones. And you know, I think – I mean, he's just almost impossible to market because he doesn't look like a fighter. He doesn't talk like a fighter. He's just universally hated for being a good dude, which is so bizarre. But, to your
and
point,
his
Dan.
Biggest thing,
go ahead.
His biggest thing with Cormier is he's really a great fighter. But he's basically only the champion because Jon Jones isn't there. I mean, if you watch the first fight between the two, it was a 5-round fight. I think he was competitive for the first 2 rounds, and I think he was a punching bag for the rest, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
I mean, Jones just destroyed him. And the only way he could ever erase that is for Jones to come back to be up to what he is, you know, his usual self, and for Cormier to beat him pretty easily. That's the only way.
I feel so bad for DC, too. I mean, that... If Jones doesn't come back for 2 years, I mean, it looks like DC will never get that rematch. And it's so unfortunate because I'd love to see a rematch between those two. And DC is such a great fighter, but he needs to stop trying to get everybody to like him. He was kind of like LeBron in Miami. Like, just go out there and say, screw what you people think. I'm the best at what I do, and just, you know, become the bad guy. Like, just feed into it, you know? The crowd would respect you more for it.
Oh, by the way, and I do think Anthony Johnson's probably going to beat him this time around in this rematch. Did you see that fight between Anthony Johnson and Glover Teixeira?
You mean that knockout where the tooth hasn't landed yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched
it's hard
it.
To call it a fight. It was,
I saw a lot of the memes, yeah. Brendan Schaub said that Anthony Johnson is the hardest puncher in UFC history. Do you guys agree with that?
Yes. I would say Cain Velasquez might be there.
Yeah.
But go ahead. Who's that delay killed us?
Oh, no, I'm agreeing. I definitely think he's the hardest hitter right now.
All right, we're going to switch gears to the NFL. Tony, have you bought your Dak Prescott jersey in every color possible yet or no?
No, because I told you this at work. I put zero stock into the preseason. I barely watched the preseason. I just feel like it's a glorified scrimmage to me, and I don't think none of it really translates to the regular season, so I don't even bother with it.
Dan,
what's your take being a Cowboys fan on the lack of respect that Tony Romo gets? I think Colin Cowherd put it really well the other day, and he's like, Dak Prescott's getting all this love for these things he's doing against vanilla defenses, against guys who aren't even going to make the team, and Tony Romo just kind of gets cast aside, and he's actually a really, really good quarterback.
Oh, I think he's a great quarterback. I mean, the knock on Romo is, can he stay healthy at this point in his career? I mean, you know, he's had multiple issues with that shoulder, and it scares me to death. But it's with any team. Everybody loves the backup till push comes to shove, and you got to put him in, and then you realize, oh, there's a reason he's the backup.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely absurd. As a Giants fan, I think – right, exactly. And I think it's – as a Giants fan, I can tell you that Tony Romo scares the crap out of me. I don't worry about Kirk Cousins. I don't worry about really anybody else in that division outside of Tony Romo beating the Giants. I really, really don't. I think Tony Romo, if he plays – if you could pencil him in for 16 games every year, I think we'd be talking about one of the four best quarterbacks in the league. I think he's that good. He does make boneheaded throws, you know, once every three games. But that's fine. I mean, he's a guy that makes plays. He can run around. He can do a lot of stuff with his legs. And I think he's a real special talent. I think Cowboys fans that don't like him are really going to look back after he retires. And when they're in that QB purgatory where the Giants are, they're heading towards two of the next 5 years, I think the Cowboys fans are going to look back and be like, God, remember how good we had it when Tony Romo was a starting quarterback for us, even with him, you know, getting injured every once and again?
The Cowboys fans that don't like Romo clearly aren't long-term Cowboys fans that remember the Quincy Carter years, Drew Henson, Chad Hutchinson. I think there's like a list of 10 guys after Aikman retired that we just, a bunch of journeyman quarterbacks who, you know, didn't deserve to be more than a backup or third stringer. They just don't value what they have right now, and it's ridiculous.
Isn't it amazing that
Bill Parcells got Quincy Carter
to a playoff berth?
If you guys really want to get rid of Tony Romo, feel free to send him to the Browns, because I would take him in a heartbeat.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, Cleveland's the perfect example of, like, you know, if you don't
have
a franchise quarterback in this league, you're screwed.
1994.
Yeah, when
yeah,
they take Bernie Kosar to the curb, yeah.
Fairweather fans think, oh, we could just go out and get a better quarterback. Like, they just grow on trees, where it's like, it doesn't work that way.
You know, actually, it's funny you say that, because I used to room with some Steelers fans about 5 or 6 years ago. And apparently Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, it's well known he's a giant douchebag, but my roommate at the time, he was a huge Steelers fan, and he wanted, I think it was Dennis Dixon,
to take over at quarterback for Ben Roethlisberger. Like, thinking now how incredibly stupid that is, I should actually bring it up to him sometime. But that just goes to show, I guess, your point where everybody wants the backup and you really need to be careful about what you wish for because, you know.
You should force that guy to walk around Pittsburgh in a Dennis Dixon jersey. Like, just to see how many people just to start throwing, like, you know, like, just fruit at him or something. Because, like, Dennis Dixon, he was a fun college quarterback. But, honestly, it does kill me. I remember when Eli had, like, remember Eli had that terrible year where he threw, you know, 27 interceptions. And basically before Beckham started playing in 2014, I had a lot of friends, close friends. Maybe the best man at my wedding said that, they should bench Eli and see what Ryan Nassib has. I was like, I know what he has. He has a great arm for holding clipboards. I do not want that guy playing at all. I know what Eli Manning does. He has a bad season, and he's fine, though. And then Eli's turned into one of the best seasons of his career since the best man at my wedding and I had that conversation. When you got a good quarterback, you got to hang on to him, even if, you know, he looks like Eli Manning or he gets hurt all the time like Tony Romo.
As a Cowboys fan and as a guy from Syracuse, I would love to see Ryan Nassib start for the Giants. Nothing would make me happier in the world.
I bet. So the best quarterback in your team is probably Terrell Pryor, but he's playing wide receiver. Are you excited for the Terrell Pryor, Josh Gordon era? He's the best quarterback in your team, though. Are you excited for the Terrell Pryor, Josh Gordon era?
No, I don't think he's leaving receiver. I think the Browns are probably going to limp through the season with the guys they have.
Griffin.
Said it on
and
I think RG3 is going to be hurt or benched by mid-October. Browns injury team, and I wonder if he's still going to be playing.
Are you going to pre-order your Browns Deshaun Watson jersey? You're going to get a jump on that, real quick?
I hope they don't take him.
Really? You don't like Deshaun Watson?
I do not. Have you seen his throwing motion?
I think history's not going to be good to this conversation.
Do you know offhand what week
play?
The Browns bye week is?
What's that?
Do you know offhand what week the Browns bye week is?
Oh, jeez. I do not.
Okay, well, let's just say it's week 7. So Josh Gordon will be hanging out in Mexico with Johnny Manziel, and he'll be suspended by week 8 after failing a drug test.
There's a fair chance.
I'm just trying to figure out when their season just goes to complete hell.
Wait till week 5 when we play the Patriots and we get beat by 30 points.
Oh, yeah, the Brady
comes
back.
He comes back from suspension, and I guarantee he's going to rack up some pretty big numbers because he's going to be pissed. And I feel like even though I'm a Browns fan, I want to go because I want to see Brady play in town for the last time, I guess. But I think it's going to get ugly quick.
Do you think
who throws more touchdowns, Brady in that game or a 13-year-old playing Madden with Brady on easy mode?
You know, the Browns' defense is pretty terrible, so it's kind of hard to say.
All right, we should
you
stop
can really go
Browns,
either
we
way.
We should start ripping on the Bills. Tony, you live here. For one,
yep.
On a scale from 1 to 10, the people that we know will say, how angry were they that they changed the stadium of the Bills from the Ralph Wilson Stadium to New Era Field? I'd probably put it at a 13 out of 10. That's how pissed people were over the name of a stadium.
I was terrified to drive through Orchard Park. I thought there was going to be, like, pillaging in the streets. People are going to come out with their pitchforks. I was terrified.
With little hats on them, yeah, burning New Era hats. Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. So
So anyway, in all seriousness, though we're going to talk about the Bills a little bit because I'm obligated to. Really, there's nothing other to talk about other than Carlos Williams slowly but surely looking like me with his shirt off. So you guys think he's going to get another job?
Not pretty.
Because the rumor is that he started gaining weight again, which I don't understand. If you're at an NFL training camp and you're running around all the time, how you start putting weight back on, especially when it was essentially new weight, because I think he's listed at like 228, but he got up to as high as 261. And that's, I mean, so he lost some of it, and then he started putting it back on while working out on a weight control program by an NFL franchise. That to me is kind of amazing, and it shows like just a complete lack of discipline. Like, I don't know if that guy, I mean, I think he gets another shot, but I don't think he's wired to have that self-discipline to I don't know, I guess be a professional athlete or be a professional at anything. But what do you guys think of, I guess, not even necessarily him, but players like that? I mean, just in general, it does seem, isn't it, I guess, today's day and age, isn't it kind of amazing that the NFL teams still take chances on guys like that? When there's, I don't know, it just seems like the juice isn't really worth the squeeze.
Oh, it drives me insane. I've said it many times that you're the top 1% of athletes. You're gifted by God with genetics, and you just can't get your head in the game. You can't be disciplined enough to make your millions and get out and have a beautiful life. It's ridiculous.
I immediately think of it anyway.
I think we should do a segment. See, no, I went somewhere else, and I think, Dan, we should have a new segment on this show. Maybe at the end of every, like, sports season, maybe not even an NFL season, but just any season that wraps up with sports, which is like the Lendale White Award for Athlete Out of Shape Award, like the Most Out of Shape Athlete Award. And I think Ray Felton probably is right up there with getting an award named after him. But I think Lendale White is still, to me, the best example of that. So last year's winner would have been Eddie Lacy. For sure. Carlos Williams is slowly but surely rocketing into that position this year. But
I think it's just like a clear indication of motivation. Like, if you're, to me, like, if I was in Eddie Lacy's position, you would think that you would do everything you could to be in the best shape you possibly could. Because in the event that Aaron Rodgers, I don't know, needs to rely on you, that you're going to come up big. And, like, to me, it just shows you they're lazy and unmotivated when they gain weight like
right.
that.
Right.
Either that or...
And Eddie Lacy actually seemingly has gotten his... Yeah, Eddie Lacy seemingly got his stuff put together. He I guess, is a lot trimmer now. He's been doing P90X all summer, so it's a very weird. But I forgot P90X.
He probably
existed. That was just like that was like a 2010 thing.
He's probably told if he doesn't get his shit in order that they're probably going to, you know, look at other options. Or, you know, he's not guaranteed anything.
Right. No, I agree. All right. So, Tony, we're probably just going to keep you on for the rest of the show if you're fine with that. We're only going to do an hour today because
I'm in a rush. I'm just watching SummerSlam in the background with the audio off.
Well, Tony also got a lot of sleep because he woke up about an hour and a half late for work today and was very joyful about it and then came into work tired somehow and was drinking coffee. Like, man, I'm so sleepy. It's like, really, the extra hour and a half sleep you got didn't do anything for you?
All right, listen, man, in my defense, I've been sober and straight edge for 8 years, and I took 2 melatonin last night. You have no idea what any kind of pill or prescription drug does to a guy like me. It messes me up beyond belief. So that was definitely a mistake on my part. But yeah, I felt like I was hungover this morning.
I think the way you say that leads everyone to believe like you're a tiny little guy, like a 125 pounds. You're a big boy from what I remember.
Yeah, 245,
Tony's a large human.
Oh, thank you.
Tony's the Eddie Lacy of Eddie Lacy of our place of employment, which we will not say on the air. But, yeah, he's the Eddie Lacy of our place of employment.
Yep.
So, yeah, no. We have a
going
Derek
back
Mason
to that, though,
which is an inside joke with just myself as well.
These guys losing motivation. Like, Phil and I, we do a very physical job, you know, about 10 hours a day. And then for about 2 hours after, I go to the gym and bust my ass. But these guys are making millions, and they can't stick to a diet and a workout regimen and, like, cut weight.
And that's their only job.
Mind.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's why I think it's just the motivation thing.
Yeah, they have all the means there for them. I mean, they have free supplements. They probably have a nutritionist on staff, I'm sure. The team will make them meals, keep them on a regimented diet plan. It's insane to think about that they just can't stay in shape.
All right, so I'm going to give you guys a couple seconds to think about this while I get mine. But who do you think is the team that's going to make the biggest jump from last year to this year? I guess a la this year's, Carolina Panthers. And I am going to go with the Tennessee Titans. And I know that sounds weird, but I really, really like their running game a lot. I'm not a huge fan of their receiving core, but I like Marcus Mariota. I think that Mike Mularkey is going to run them a lot, basically. I think their defense is a little bit better than it was last year. So I really like Tennessee making a jump. Now, I shouldn't say jump as in, like, they're going to go, you know, they're going to win 15 games and, you know, go to the Super Bowl. But I think, like, I think a team that's going to go from what were they last year, like, 3-13, and I think they're going to be right around 500 and maybe make the playoffs next year. I think they're on the upward trajectory. And I'm not going to let you guys give a cop-out answer like the Raiders, because that's everyone. So anybody
yeah,
with the
mine.
Raiders, what other team do you get? Yeah, I know. It's everyone. So
I'll stay with
what's your guys' team?
I'll stay within the division. I'm going to go with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I feel like they could make a jump. Blake Bortles quietly threw 30-plus touchdowns last year.
That yeah, probably 34, 33, something like that.
Yeah. And don't they get Dante Fowler back? And they're basically getting two first-round defensive players on their defense.
Three, if like you think about it, because they drafted Ramsey, they drafted Jack in the, I think, first or early second round.
Yeah.
And he was a top five talent. And, and Dante Fowler. Yeah, so they're getting three, which is kind of amazing. All right, Tony, who you got making the jump?
This is year three of struggling right now, because I was going to go Oakland, and then I was going to go Jacksonville. So thanks for that, guys. I agree, though. They're both stacked with young talent. I think they're both going to improve a lot. Gun to my head, I guess most improved. I guess I'll have to go Tampa Bay, because I think Jameis Winston has a lot of talent, and he's got another year under his belt. I think he'll do big things.
Tampa Bay was going
to
be my.
I
like Tampa Bay.
Coming back to earth, and I'm not sure about the rest of the division.
No, I'm 100% on board with the Tampa Bay thing. All right, another quick question we're going to do is fall from grace. I mean, what team from last year, other than Denver, that's going to be the easiest one? What team other than, and I'll go last this time, so, you guys can go first. Other than Denver, what team that made the playoffs last year, we'll do it like that, made the playoffs last year, is not going to make the playoffs this year, and why?
You said not going to make the playoffs?
Yep.
I'll go Kansas City. I don't believe much in Kansas City. I just feel like it's so easy to beat them if you score early and often, get up by 14, and make them throw the ball, take their running game completely out of it. But, I mean, they have a great defense, so it seems like no team can ever do it.
Yeah. I think the team with the biggest regression, I think they're going to still make the playoffs, is going to be the Panthers. I don't think they're going 15-1. But the team that made the playoffs last year that I think might fall out, I will go with the Minnesota Vikings.
Ooh. I like that one. It's a cool prediction, Cotton.
I don't know about that one. I pick Minnesota to be pretty good and right there with Green Bay this year.
I'm going to go with Cincinnati.
Hey, if you ever look at Teddy Bridgewater's numbers, he's not nearly as impressive as he's made out to be.
No, you're right on that. And I'm not a big Teddy Bridgewater guy either. I like that he's mature, and I like that he's not going to make a ton of mistakes, but he's also not making a ton of things happen either. My team is going to be the Cincinnati Bengals, and I think a guy like Andy Dalton needs a ton of talent at wide receiver, and they lost They lost their Muhammad Sanu, Marvin Jones. I mean, Eifert's good. AJ Green, obviously incredible. And I guess Jeremy Hill is supposedly poised for a huge year, according to some headlines. So, but even still, I just am not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of a guy like Andy Dalton losing, you know, his number. We'll say, I mean, with Eifert and Green, we'll say number three, number four option. I'm not a fan of that. So I think it's going to be Cincy. I don't think they make the playoffs this year. But I want to get back to the Carolina thing. Carolina is going to breeze through this schedule. Like, listen to the schedule. So I'm not going to read the ad or whatever, but they got Denver, regression. San Francisco, terrible. Minnesota, you know, pretty good. Atlanta, eh. Tampa, young. New Orleans, meh. Arizona, all right, tough. L.A., meh. Kansas City, one of their tougher games. New Orleans, Oakland, Seattle, San Diego, Washington, Atlanta, Tampa Bay. That might be the easiest schedule I've ever seen in my life. I mean, really, there's three games that they could lose. That's really all I see.
Like I said, I think they're going to make the playoffs, but I don't think they're going to look like the team of destiny that, you know, they looked like last year. I just don't think they're just going to – yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I think they're going to be a good team, but I just don't think they're going to be, like, that team where you're like, no one's stopping them. And I don't think they're going to – if they play the Seahawks head-to-head next year in the playoffs, I don't think they're beating the Seahawks again. I don't see that happening.
Okay, I'm going to have you guys do a Super Bowl prediction with a little twist, though. All right, who does your head say is going to win the Super Bowl? And then I'm going to do who does your heart say is going to win the Super Bowl. So, like, one that you're – if you're thinking logically, and then one if you're basically, you know, going off how you feel about the team. So what you see on paper and then what you feel about the team. So I think to make it a little easier, I'll go first. My head is telling me that it's going to be I hate Arizona this year. I really do with Carson Palmer. I really think mine is going to be – my head is going to tell me Green Bay, New England. And I think my heart – and you guys are going to laugh this – is going to be Giants, Pittsburgh.
I would only like that because I'd love to see all the Steelers fans, like – well, you know what? Actually, I think the Steelers would beat the Giants. Sorry. But
it's fine. And I'm probably with – if you shot me with that sodium pentothal stuff, I'm sure I would think the same thing, but I can't. Good conscience think that.
Yeah. I was at a Super Bowl party with some Steelers fans. Who did they play last where they lost to? Totally drawing a blank right now. Not Arizona.
Green Bay.
They beat Arizona.
Was it Green Bay?
Green Bay. Yeah, Super Bowl 45.
Yeah, that was Rodgers' Super Bowl.
I'm totally drawing a blank.
What?
Yeah, just to see the Steelers fans, just the deflation on their face. Yeah.
They had the Browns fan, everybody. Okay, Tony, with your head, who do you think is going to win?
With my head, I agree with you. I got to go Green Bay, New England. I think Brady on the redemption tour, I mean, he's motivated every year, but given the extra incentive of Deflategate, I think he's just going to come out and just tear up the league. It's just going to be ridiculous. I can't wait till he plays the Bills. He's going to throw for like six touchdowns and just go crazy.
I'm so happy I'm not going to that game. I'm so happy. God.
So who gets beat up more, the Browns or the Bills, you think?
Oh, the Browns, easily.
The Browns.
You think? Well, yeah, all right. I mean, I guess all the – I do think – okay. All right. We'll get into that.
Who's your heart, Tony? Yeah.
Go in my heart. And I would love this matchup because, you know, I'm a Cowboys homer, obviously. But I think it would be great if all of America would have to pick who do they hate more, New England or Dallas. It will be the most hated Super Bowl in history.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe instead of saying head and heart, maybe we'll go head and want. We'll say it instead of heart. Who do you want to see in the Super Bowl? So that's fine. Realistically, want
that.
Dan.
My
you can't say the Browns versus the Browns. But
oh,
Jesus yeah.
Christ. Listen, I'm
Browns
very
at Browns.
About, if you can't tell,
yeah.
I'm very realistic.
No, I know
about
you are.
Them and their chances. So, I have no false hopes for the Browns.
But, so who does your head say is going to make it?
My head? I'm going to actually switch it up on you guys. I think it's going to be the Seahawks and Patriots rematch. And I think...
I was really close to going with that, too. I like Seattle a ton.
But my heart says Green Bay Patriots, and I think in Green Bay winning it.
Gotcha. Interesting. So my Giants-Pittsburgh is the most realistic pick on this list. That's good. I think that's what's going to happen. But, no.
For real?
Man, I do think that that's probably – I do think that's going to be the consensus pick is going to be Green Bay, New England, I think, by most people. And I don't, and even though I picked it, I really don't understand the Green Bay thing, maybe just because Aaron Rodgers is so good. But Green Bay kind of.
And he's getting Jordy back.
I think on defense. Getting Jordy back, I guess, helps. But, oh my God, Oakland has 3-4 straight home games. What the hell? What is up with the NFL schedule? Did you guys notice this? I think we talked about this last time, Dan, but you notice like these blocks of home games some of these teams are getting.
You did.
So Oakland plays.
Yeah.
Oakland plays. Denver plays at Oakland, and then they have a bye. Houston plays at Oakland. Carolina at Oakland, and then Buffalo at Oakland. Oakland has 4 straight home games and then a bye shoehorn in the middle of it. That's crazy. Cleveland, I think, has this, too. I know the Bills have 3 straight home games in December, which is hilarious because that means the NFL hates people in Buffalo because it's so cold in that stadium in December. Like, it's cold everywhere in Buffalo in December, but in that stadium especially. I don't know why, but it's literally about 20 degrees colder in that stadium than it is on the rest of Earth.
It's those swirling winds off of Lake Erie. I went to a game there once. Years ago, and it was just cold rain, and it was the most miserable experience of my life. I had to leave at halftime. It was so bad.
Yeah, and there's not enough booze in that stadium to keep you warm at some of those games. It's ridiculous. But, all right, I'm looking at the Browns' schedule. They don't have that bad of a schedule other than their division.
Right.
I mean, Philly, they're better. I think they're better than Philly. They got Miami. Tennessee, the Jets. I mean, these are winnable games. San Diego, Buffalo, they're pretty winnable games.
So they'll lose
outside
in
of their division.
Way.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, just looking at it. For what it's worth, actually, another Cowboys fan that I work with, he's a D-bag too. But
applying that Tony's a D-bag as well.
Can I defend myself for a second? As a Dallas fan, I feel I'm the most realistic, least douchebag Dallas fan there is. I honestly hate 99% of other Cowboys fans because I just feel like they have this false sense of just bravado about them that we haven't earned in 20 years.
Right.
So realistically, your heart is
the Cowboys making the Super Bowl. But realistically, what do you think their record's going to be?
I think 10-6, and we'll win the division because I think the division will be that bad.
Yeah, you're really just going up against the Giants.
Yeah, that's really our only challenge, I believe. I think Washington will regress.
Bill, I was just waiting for a reaction there.
No, I think he's right. I think we're going to be the two teams battling for the division. I think you're right, and I think if Romo plays 16 games, trust me, I'm really worried about that a lot. If Romo gets hurt, then I think the Giants should win the division, but, you know.
Hopefully you guys bury the Eagles and they get the number one pick because the Browns have the Eagles' number one pick next year. And
they do?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, for the Carson Wentz trade.
Oh,
we have their number one pick.
Yeah, that's so.
By the way, I'm gonna fucking lose my mind if he becomes a stud.
I know you are.
I highly doubt it.
I can't wait for that to happen.
So Anthony, you do not think he's going to become a stud?
What's that?
You don't think he's going to be a stud, Carson Wentz?
No. No, I think he's going to be a bust.
That actually makes me feel better.
I just think because it's
Philly, I never wish anything bad. But if we passed on a franchise quarterback for just a bunch of pieces, that will definitely test my loyalty.
Big time.
Yeah,
well, Dan,
I can't blame it.
The Bills have great uniforms, so you look a lot better in those jerseys and shirts and stuff than you will in the doo-doo Browns. I hate their colors. They're the worst. So I just did the Dallas.
Never speak about the Browns like that again.
Who
Sorry.
Decided
I did
to,
the
it
Dallas's...
was a good idea to put their name on the uniform? Like, I love their old style of their uni. The new ones just look ridiculous.
Oh, the Browns? Yeah.
Yeah, they look like a junior
Cleveland
high football
along the
team.
Side looks like shit. And actually, the uniforms aren't popular, and they're saying whenever it is, I think you have to make a commitment
oh,
to have that uniform for 4 years. So that they're going to revert back to the old uniforms when the next 3 years are over with.
There's got to be some big wigs in a conference room that looked at those and they're like, oh yeah, this looks good. This will sell. Like, who are those people?
Who? Yeah. That's a good question.
Oh
it
man.
Looked like...
I just did the numbers, guys. Dallas. I looked at their schedule. I have them winning 11, and I have the Giants winning 9. Oh, boy.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I'm
going to
take a look quick.
Yeah, Dallas has a pretty – I mean, obviously they play a lot of the same teams, but I have Dallas winning the first game at the Giants, the home game. I have them winning that game. I have them winning Washington, Chicago, San Francisco, Cincy, losing to Green Bay. Basically, the teams I have them losing to is Green Bay, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Minnesota, the second Giants game, and that's it.
That game.
I mean,
at
maybe
Lambeau
Baltimore.
Will
yeah, maybe Baltimore. Maybe they lose the Cincinnati game. I doubt it. Minnesota, maybe, but like I think they split the Giants game. I think they sweep the rest of the division, and I only have them losing 5. Like that's rough. That's rough sledding there for me as a Giants fan. I'm actually kind of hurt. I might go to sleep and not wake up tomorrow thinking about it.
Yeah. Last 4, Giants, Bucks, Lions, and Eagles.
It's pretty easy. It's pretty easy last 4. Yeah, so Giants going 9-7.
Bill, what's your realistic view on the Giants?
A realistic view on the Giants is that they did overspend for Olivier Vernon. They did overspend for Janoris Jenkins. Janoris Jenkins, by the way, is still looking for his goddamn cleat after Tyrod Taylor juked him out of his damn shoe. I'm sure he's still wandering Ralph Wilson Stadium trying to figure out what the hell happened to him. But Tony, you probably saw it, but Dan, did you see it? Tyrod Taylor, like, Janoris Jenkins had a clear path to Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor literally juked him out so bad that Tyrod was rolling out. And you still see Jenkins trying to collect himself. Like, he's literally trying to, like, catch his balance still. After Tyrod rolls out, he's on the other side of the field throwing the ball down the field. You can see Jenkins in the background literally trying to catch his balance still. It's kind of funny. But, I mean, realistically, I think they lost a lot of close games last year. I mean, they really should have won, 5 games that they lost. I mean, they should have won 11-5. The Dallas game, for sure, they blew it. The New Orleans game, they blew it. They blew the New England game, like, The Panthers game, they were up very, very, very late in that game, and then Cam brought them back. And
was there something they led
five,
in the fourth quarter in 5 or 6 games and lost?
Yes, they lost in the last 3 minutes. If NFL games were 56 minutes long, the Giants would have been, I think, 12-4 last year. But I actually think it helps that they solidified the defensive line quite a bit. The linebackers are still pretty bad. The secondary safeties are very iffy. Landon Collins, not that quick, but he's a good in-the-box guy. He's like a bootleg Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor, very overrated, by the way. He can't really cover. But he's a good – he's essentially like a roving middle fielder linebacker guy. But that's a lot of what Landon Collins is. They're trying Leon Hall at free safety, which actually might not be a bad move. So they have Eli Apple, Cromartie, and Janoris Jenkins as their corner. So their secondary is not terrible. Their front 4 are pretty good. Their offense is, you know, Victor Cruz. We all need to just stop with the Victor Cruz stuff, all right? It sucks to say, but Victor Cruz is done. I hate saying it. I love Victor Cruz. He won us a Super Bowl. but he's done. Like, that knee injury, for the way that Victor Cruz plays,
Victor Cruz can't overcome. Miles Austin of the Giants.
Yes, thank you. That's a great comparison. But, I mean, I just think that injury is just too devastating for a guy like Victor Cruz to come back from. The running backs don't exactly wake me up in the morning with all kinds of glee. We don't cut Andre Williams. I swear to God. The fact that he's wearing Ernie Davis's number makes me just almost openly weep every time I think about it, because he is so slow and he's so plodding and he's our number two running back, and I don't understand why. If the Giants brought Carlos Williams in, I'd actually be thrilled. But, you know, Rashad Jennings is, you really don't get a more bland running back in the NFL than Rashad Jennings, but he's good. I like him. He's going to get 4 to 6 yards on every single carry. So I can't really hate that. Shane Vereen might as well be our number three receiver. I do like the tight ends a lot. The offensive line is meh. The left tackle, Eric Flowers, scares me a little bit because he's so raw. He's just young. But I think overall they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be a middle of the pack team. I think that they're, I mean, if I'm being realistic, I think that they are going to be in the playoff race until about week 16, week 17, with the possibility of making it or the possibility of not making it, which is the most obvious statement on the planet because you either are or aren't. But I think that they're going to be right in it to the very end. But I will say that realistically, if Tony Romo is healthy all year and he can somehow overcome the defense, the Cowboys are trotting out this year, which is actually significantly worse than the Giants this year, which is good for me. I think that they are going to win a lot of high-scoring games, but I don't think they're that team in 2014 that probably could have went to the Super Bowl.
This is just a guesstimate of Eli that are left. Do you see them getting back to the Super Bowl? And that's kind of hard.
I do, if the pass rush is there. I think that he could make one more playoff run. I think he has one more in him. The problem is not Eli that I worry about. I mean, he does scare the hell out of me when he throws the ball sometimes because it's like, who the hell? But, like, it's Jerry Reese. Jerry Reese won 2 Super Bowls with a lot of Ernie Accorsi's players. And that's the thing a lot of Giants fans don't remember is Jerry Reese is not that good of a GM. He really isn't. He's had some bad drafts the last handful of years. Any idiot could have picked Jason Pierre-Paul. I mean, those first-round picks do not impress me. We haven't re-signed a first-round pick outside of Jason Pierre-Paul in, like, a decade. So that's not good. But, like, it's always the second, third, fourth-round picks that I'm always way more impressed with when it comes to a GM. Like, Seattle getting Bobby Wagner in the second round, hitting Cam Chancellor in the fourth round. That's the kind of stuff that impresses me. Not drafting Earl Thomas in the first round. Like that, Earl Thomas is almost a no-brainer. Jason Pierre-Paul is almost a no-brainer. Odell Beckham in that receiving class and where they drafted, almost a no-brainer. Even though I know this is unpopular with Giants fans, I'd actually rather have Aaron Donald, who got picked right after Beckham, because I think he's going to be outside of Khalil Mack, and maybe even over Khalil Mack, the best defensive player in the league in about 3 months. But that being said, I really think if I'm being super realistic, I think the Giants are about a 9-7, 10-6 team that probably will end up losing the division to Dallas if Tony Romo plays 16 games. That is my realistic expectation of the Giants season.
I'll give your Giants credit on this. You say they overspent on their defense. I would much rather overspend on my defense and do what Dallas did and do absolutely nothing with your defense. Considering you have 3 guys out on suspension, your best player, Sean Lee, his body is made out of paper mache, so who knows if he's going to stay on the field.
It's a very similar bone density structure to Tony Romo. Your 2 best players are always hurt.
Claiborne's stats. Morris Claiborne coming off an injury, 4 years with Dallas, 3 playing, had 3 total picks.
He's one of the biggest draft busts, non-quarterback draft busts I can remember.
Morris Claiborne. Yeah, because wasn't he like a top 4 or 5 pick, and then everyone thought he would be long gone before Dallas got him, and they somehow snagged him. And
he was huge.
Didn't he quit the team like every other year?
Yeah, he was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, an All-American. When we drafted him, I was like, oh, we finally got that shutdown corner. And the guy is just never in position, can never make a play. Just terrible.
It's so weird because I think a lot of people thought that he was going to be like Patrick Peterson, and he's just not that guy. Patrick Peterson is an adult. Morris Claiborne is not so much. I mean, yeah, he walked out of practice. I mean, the hurt thing is whatever. If you try, Sean Witherspoon for the Falcons is a leader on the team, but he's hurt pretty often. But he's like around the facility when he's hurt. And I mean, that's the kind of guy you sort of want when you get a first round pick. And with all the accolades that he had, you want like a Patrick Peterson or a Sean Witherspoon, somebody like that. But like when you get a Mo Claiborne, and then he is just the most immature. The dude got a 2 on his Wonderlic. A 2.
And that's probably because he just like accidentally guessed the right answer.
That's what he did. He sat down and he just basically started writing. He just started guessing. He didn't think it was important for a cornerback to take the Wonderlic seriously. Then why even take it? You don't have to take anything at the combine, really. You don't even have to go to the combine, especially for a guy that highly touted. He didn't need to do the Wonderlic at all. So why do it and get a terrible grade? It makes no sense.
But I love when a guy who's in the most important time of his life takes 0% of it seriously. Like, oh, I don't need to worry about this test. It's not my future or millions of dollars on the line.
Says a lot.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. But, all right, guys, we're going to put a bow on it. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was just going to point out, if it makes you feel any better, the Browns are probably going to end up cutting Justin Gilbert, who was the 8th pick 2 years ago. And
yeah.
Barkevious Mingo. I almost just have to laugh at it now. Like, it's just so ridiculously bad with the Browns.
Yeah, you're from
one thing I did want to bring up before we wrap this up. What's everybody's fantasy football team name this year?
I just go with the default Kegels Kids every year. That's been my fantasy name for all my things for like 12 years now. What was the one I had the other day, Tony, though? It's like, it was a Todd Gurley one, though, that I thought of. I forget what it was.
Oh, I thought you had a Gaptooth one. I remember.
You probably had it for me. I think mine was like Ram Me in the Girly Parts or something like that. I forget. It was something stupid. But,
I keep it simple every year.
I don't
just
have
go with Big D.
Big D. The swinging D.
Yeah. For Dallas, then I like a good anatomy joke.
It's good. It's clever. It's like Corolla swinging Black Caucus. That always makes me laugh.
It's very wishful thinking. Something my team doesn't have and something I don't have.
All right, Dan, what's yours?
I've got a couple I'm kind of debating on. I mean, I've got the ones that I've used in the past. The Sons of Danarchy, the Carpe D's Nuts. Yeah, there's a few that I'm kind
of
juggling around there.
Sons of Danarchy.
That's what I'm going to go with.
I forgot about the Sons of Danarchy. Yeah, Breaking Dan. We can just do all kinds of shows.
Or
Dan Prano.
Yeah.
Shit. I got nothing else. I'm really
tired. The kid I work with, his team name is the Sacks from the Back or something stupid like that. And,
stupid. Yeah. I never hear a lot of good ones, though. I think the
People try to.
That's why I didn't. I made mine the Wolf of Fantasy last year, and I had the worst fantasy season of all time. So I guess I'll never change my name again. I'll just keep going with Kegels Kids. Kegels Kids is one a couple grand in fantasy football money over the years, so I don't think I'm going to switch it ever again.
Sitcom.
The Wolf of Fantasy? Well, it was more like the Wolf of Wall Street.
No,
I think at the time.
Evil Kids. It's like a Charles in Charge or some shit.
Oh, you know what it was? It was like a Jerry's Kids thing. And then I was like, oh, Kegel scale will work. And this was, like, I was literally, like, 19 or 20. It was back when you slept on a floor in a Carhartt and had a MP40 next to you. Back in those days.
Actually, no, I wasn't on the floor. What are you talking about? But, yeah, we're going
in
to
my head, you
were
on the floor with an MP40 and you were sleeping in a Carhartt.
I didn't own a Carhartt. Two, I wasn't on the floor.
And three, it was in, like, late May. Like, it would have been that cold where you needed a fucking Carhartt.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
so next
that's
week,
hilarious. Yeah,
it's,
that's exciting.
Week from Sunday. Coming up, is that right?
Yep. Week from Sunday. Yeah, week from Sunday. I'm going to, going there. Hey, and then in 3 days, I'm helping Tony move to Syracuse. That's exciting.
Woo!
You're losing
Tony?
Yeah, we're losing Tony.
Is he headed up? Tony, are you headed up to deliver, like, a wire up there? Is that a job thing or what?
Yeah, no, my girlfriend got a job out there, and we're just having to move home after her father, unfortunately, passed away and be closer to family.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean
yeah,
to
Tony
down,
has
life happens.
Yeah, I was gonna say Tony has family that loves him. It's so weird. Dan, I think Dan does too. So this is all bizarre to me. This is all foreign.
Let me fix that. Her family loves me. My family, they put up with me.
It's like my wife's family loves me, but
that's
my actual family, nah, not so much.
Hey,
yeah. Anyway,
speaking of plans,
go ahead.
I was looking online and. I didn't know UFC 203 is in Cleveland, Ohio, Saturday, September 10th.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I'm contemplating going to that.
You said you're planning on going to that?
Thinking about it, I was looking on SeatGeek and I found some nosebleed seats for about $100.
You know, for that much, I'd rather just buy the fight, to be honest. Stipe is at... I don't know if you've listened before, but Stipe actually grew up like 10 minutes. Actually, I used to live in the same city he used to live in. But he grew up like 10 minutes from me. And yeah, he's huge in this area. I mean, obviously, people claim he broke the Cleveland curse when he won the title, and then the Cavs won their title and everything else. And so that's going to be a huge event here. That should be nuts.
Yeah, and for personal reasons, I'm a huge CM Punk fan, and I think there'd be nothing better than to go to the UFC fight wearing one of my Punk wrestling T-shirts and just having fans shit on me and just getting into arguments with people all night long.
Oh, Tony, we forgot to touch on that, by the way. So, yeah, I'll probably bring him back on next week to talk about that. But anyway, listen, I have to wrap this show up. I am quite tired. Some of us actually got up and went to work on time. And Dan works. Dan doesn't go to work until like 10 or
something.
So,
true. I actually just popped a melatonin because I didn't learn my lesson from today. I only took one this time instead of two.
God. Yeah, Dan has an awesome schedule. It's like 10 to something.
Yeah.
Yeah, my accounts are all less.
You're
going to
need a driver?
Seven. Yeah. Not bad.
That's such a perfect shift for you because you are the worst person in the world to get up in the morning. I learned at my wedding. But anyway, yes.
That is true. I am not a morning person. I really don't mind staying up till 1 o'clock every night and watching TV and getting up a little late and going in at 10. So,
kind of nice.
Pretty solid.
All right, guys, for real, we're ending this show right now. All right, Tony, thank you for calling. Feel free to call anytime. Just always text me before you do. I'll let you know if we go on at 9 or 8. And but, yeah,
yeah,
always
anytime,
call in.
I like how you're pretending like
I
won't
talk
to you at work
man.
Tomorrow and see you.
You know what? I only want to talk to you on this show. Don't worry. I stopped talking to Dan when we started doing the show, too, so we would have more to talk about in the show. And then I just cut him short and end the show because I'm sleepy. I'm a great friend. I would hate me as a friend, to be honest with you. But thank you guys for at least pretending to be mine. Tony, also, I'm going to put you on blast on the air. Tony keeps making references to my daughter. Can't wait for her to turn 18. She's 14 months old. It's
right.
It's pretty jarring sometimes.
17
you know,
more years, man. But I'm just going to be making it rain with those singles.
Do you have like
that
the Y2J countdown clock?
I actually do, yeah. It's in my living room on the wall.
God. Oh, hopefully you have a good battery. Yeah. Anyway, so enjoy that because she looks just like me. So, you know, my apologies. But, all right, for real. Why did I extend the show when I'm trying to get off of the air? All right, guys. Thanks for calling in, Tony. I really appreciate it. Dan, I will talk to you at some point and then see you in like a week. I'm pretty pumped, not gonna lie. So we got to go to that Mabel's barbecue place for dinner after Cedar Point.
The Michael Simon restaurant? Yeah, we'll definitely go.
I have no idea what that even means, but it was
Michael
I went
Simon,
there and it was a bomb barbecue.
Yeah, you went okay. Michael Simon is the guy who's like on the Iron Chef and shit, and he's a Cleveland guy, and he's got like a bunch of different restaurants in the area. That's one of his restaurants.
Oh, nice. Oh, it's delicious. All right, guys.
Thanks.
Talk to you guys soon. All right. Stay white.